In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Throw goes to second for one, over to first. The ball game is over. And the Cubs have clobbered the Nationals by a score of 14-1. Score that one 5-6-3. It was Dansby Swanson, the middleman, an unusual 5-6-3 double play to end the ball game.
Well, I think we've given ourselves a chance to play games in September that count and that mean something. And it took a really good month, and it's going to take another great month. But I'm proud of the guys for putting together a great stretch of baseball and giving ourselves a chance here.
That was how it sounded on Marquee, and that was Craig Counsell afterwards, and a Cubs 14-1 victory over those Nationals. 8-1 road trip, 6-game win streak, 5 games above 500 for the first time since May 21st. And don't turn your full attention to the Chicago Bears just yet, because the Cubs are relevant on September 2nd. And joining me now to talk about just that, he is the Cubs writer for MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. Andy Martinez joins me on the Bernstein and Holmes show with me, Rami Makhlouf, filling in. How are you this afternoon, Andy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, I know you work for the flagship, and I know you got to say or not say certain things sometimes when you work for an organization. But Andy, honestly, if I asked you 2 months ago if we'd be here talking about a Cubs team making a playoff push on September 2nd, would you have believed me?
No, and truthfully, even if you asked me probably like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I probably would have said no, too.
Fair.
I think I was actually on with Gabe Ramirez a couple weeks ago, and he told me, did they get it done? I said, I don't think so. Like, I think at that time it was like 6 or 7 games. I think I was like, that's too much. And now you're looking at 3, realistically like 3.5, because they don't have the tiebreaker over the Braves. But, I mean, I think if you would have told Cubs fans 2 months ago, like, hey, the games in September are going to be meaningful and they're going to be chasing it, I think every Cubs fan would have signed up for it, just given how things were going. I think the situation they're in right now looked so far away, like so far away just even 2 weeks ago. And they've turned it around. They've been playing well. This offense that scored the 6th most runs in baseball last season is finally kind of playing like that offense right here during this road trip. And they've put themselves in a position where, like, their September schedule is pretty favorable. Like, they play 3 teams with winning records, one of them this weekend with the Yankees, and then it's just the Dodgers and Phillies, and then it's a lot of teams under 500 the rest of the way that you feel like that if there's going to be an opportunity for a run, now's the time to do it.
And when you look at, you know, the starting pitching has been good most of the season. The bullpen figured things out a couple months ago. The defense has gotten better as the season has gone on for this Cubs team. But what really was the major difference and why they were able to do what they did 18-8 in the month of August was that offense. Is what we saw in August from that offense something that is sustainable through September and, if necessary, beyond, in your eyes, Andy?
It's going to be really interesting. I think the insane level of production they're getting from the bottom of the order, PCA and Miguel Amaya and Christian Bethencourt, the catchers, I don't think like that's sustainable. I think they were performing, like, Christian Bethencourt's got a weighted runs created plus of like 250, which is like literally that's just not going to happen, right? Like he's not going to keep doing that. And if he does, like, I mean, you can play back the tape and then tell me how wrong I am. But like Miguel Amaya and PCA are performing really, really well. Are they this level of offensive players? I don't think they are, but like they're taking this hot stretch right now that everyone will sign up for it. And I think they're not as bad as they were early on in the season, where it's like the pitchers got to the bottom of that order and they knew, like, all right, we have two free outs right there. And early, especially early on in the season, where Dansby was struggling too, it was like, all right, 7, 8, 9. That I don't really have to pitch to Nico Horner in the sixth spot, or I don't really have to pitch to whoever the five hitter is, whether it's Morel or Bellinger or whoever, because I know if I can get to that 7, 8, 9, I've got three free outs to kind of work around it. Well, now, like, every single rally, it feels like, especially in this 8-1 stretch that they've been on, it's felt like it's the 8 and 9 hitters. So the crazy 10-3 comeback against the Pirates. The game-winning knock was from Christian Bethencourt, and he drove in 7 runs. I thought it was so interesting when they walked PCA, like, to intentionally walk PCA to get to Christian Bethencourt is 100% the right move. But in that moment, it's like, why are you doing that? Like, this guy is really, really red hot. But it's just so funny how the bottom of the order has transformed into, like, this Achilles heel, into just, like, a suit of armor almost, right? Like, it's your strong sword. Like, it's what you want. As your offense is clicking, like Craig Council's always talked about, the lineup isn't like a straight line. It's more of like a circular motion, right? If everyone's going, like, it keeps going and around and around and around. And for large chunks of the season, it wasn't a circle because there was three easy outs at the bottom of the lineup. Now it's functioning like that circle that he's always talked about.
You know, when you talk about the bottom of that order, and it was a point I made to start the show, Andy, and talking with Andy Martinez of Marquee Sports Network here, Rami Makhlouf in for Bernstein and Holmes, and I said, we can probably expect some regression from PCA and Amaya at the bottom of that order, which, as you pointed out, has been the big difference for this offense. But I also think there is, when you look at the rest of this roster, I think Paredes has more in that bat than what we've seen to that point. Michael Bush has more slug in his bat than what we saw in August. Same for Ian Happ, who's been hitting the ball, but not quite with the slug that he can perform at. And Cody Bellinger didn't hit the baseball at the level that we know he can in the month of August. Even if there's a little drop-off from those guys at the bottom of the order who you just talked about, if you see those guys sort of come back up to their level, this offense is just as, if not more, dangerous than what we saw in August, is it not?
I agree, and I was talking with Tony Andracki on our Cubs Weekly podcast just last week how, at the time, it was really funny how the 8 and 9 hitters performing so well is masking some of the other weaknesses in the lineup. Like, at the time, Michael Bush was really, really going, like, was going through a slump and kind of still is struggling a little bit. Isak Paredes was, at the time, really, really struggling, was hitting in the 100 since being traded over. And in that time, Isak Paredes is starting to figure it out, which I think he's ultimately, like, the X factor for this lineup. I don't think he's, like, per se the best hitter, but he's your biggest slug. But, you know, they brought him in from Tampa Bay to kind of provide offensive stability at third base, with Christopher Morel being kind of like, you didn't know what you were going to get, right? Like, are you going to get two homers a game, or are you going to get a 5-game run where he's going to strike out a lot or not get on base? You knew with Isak Paredes, like, the offensive consistency was going to be there and the defense was going to be solid. Well, you've gotten the defense, and now you're starting to see the offense come along, which I think really lengthens that lineup. Like, it provides some slug and some threat in the middle of it, and kind of turns it really over to Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, and then the bottom of that lineup to kind of keep things going. So, yeah, like, I think the bottom of the production has been able to mask some things while they figure it out. Baseball is so funny that, like, there's going to be times when guys are going really, really hot and the other guys aren't. And that's just how it works. And now you're hoping, like, if the 8 and 9 guys kind of, you know, come down to earth a little bit, they're still at a really good level while the other guys kind of, maybe they get hot.
You know, we've been obviously talking a lot of Bears here on the station along with the Cubs. And I keep having to remind myself to pump the brakes a little bit on the Caleb Williams hype and expectations. And do I need to pump the brakes on PCA? And it's not quite at the level of Caleb Williams, but do I need to pump the brakes on my expectations or excitement for a PCA? I'll give you an example. The other day, I was hosting the afternoon show here with Mark Grody, and we were sort of coming up with what's his ceiling or who's a comp if he can keep doing what he's doing. Corbin Carroll was a name that was thrown out. I said, if he shows the type of pop that we've seen in the bat lately, maybe a healthy Byron Buxton type is somebody who he could be compared to. Is that setting the bar too high for a PCA? What do you think the ceiling is for that guy, and especially given what we've seen in the last 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah, I think the offensive side is really the big question. Like, I think defensively, and I've said this like multiple times, and I'll keep saying it. Like, if you have the opportunity to go watch the Cubs play baseball, go watch PCA play center field, because the plays he makes defensively on TV, like, just never do it justice, right? Like, you'll see it on TV, and he's like, oh, he's camped under that. And you're like, oh, you didn't realize he covered, like, half the outfield to go catch that. Or, like, sometimes Ian Happ or Cody Bellinger will make a catch in left or right field, and PCA has, like, gotten there to cover, like, be behind him. And it's like, well, he covered an insane amount of ground to get there. Defensively, I think he could be, like, if he isn't already, like, top two or three defensive center fielders in baseball. Like, in that position, I think that's incredibly valuable. Even when his offensive struggles were going bad, he was still like a 1.2 WAR player. I remember it was like around that metric, just based on his defense. Now you're seeing the bat come along, and you're starting to see like, well, that could be a real difference maker for a team. He can steal some outs, and if the offense can come around, like who knows what it is? Like is I don't know if he'll have as much pop as Byron Buxton when he's healthy, but like it's a really interesting conversation knowing like. He's probably going to hit for a little higher average than other players. So it's a really, really...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Really interesting discussion of like what he could be like. Could he be like a Corbin Carroll? Potentially, just the profiles kind of line up. But I think he's a much better defensive outfielder than Corbin Carroll, and I think that's really going to be the strength and where he shines.
Talking with Andy Martinez of Marquee Sports Network here on The Score. Rami Makhlouf in for Bernstein and Holmes. The other guy who's really made a big turnaround here, and they're attributing a lot of it to sort of a change in his mechanics at the plate, is Miguel Amaya. How much of what we've seen from him do you think is real and sustainable for a guy who really struggled at the plate for much of the first half of the season?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think I never thought, like, when he was at his worst, he was hitting like 170, 180, like in that range. I never thought he was that bad offensively. Like, I didn't think he was a difference maker at hitting on the catcher position, but like, I knew it was somewhere kind of in the middle. You mentioned the swing adjustment. I spoke to him. He got rid of a leg kick right around July. He sat for a few days, got rid of the leg kick, kind of switched to a toe tap. He worked with Juan Cabreja, the hitting coach, and some of the other hitting coaches to kind of implement that. And one of the guys that actually reached out to him to kind of help him get used to it was Nelson Cruz, the former big league slugger. And Nelson had a really interesting soundbite or text to him saying, like, you're hitting like 180. You have nothing to lose. You may as well try this. Like, you can't get much worse than it is. And the results are immediate. Like, even when he's making outs, like, they're good productive outs, or he's hitting the ball square. Like, it's a really just a different at bat. Is he the long-term answer offensively? And like, are they going to try and upgrade at the catching position? I still think like that's probably one of the areas they're going to be looking at in the offseason is to upgrade the catching position. At the very worst of like having another backup to Amaya, but like he's really put himself in the conversation where it's like, well, like is this kind of who he can be? Because then that's a really good difference maker for the offense.
Yeah, because I was talking about that last week on the station when it comes to Miguel Amaya and whether or not he's sort of changed their plans for the offseason. Look, if there's an upgrade to be made, I'm here for it as a Cubs fan and somebody who follows and roots for this baseball team. But you look at how catchers are coveted around the league right now. I don't see the obvious upgrade there. And also, when I see development at the major league level, something that quite frankly the Cubs have struggled with here over the last handful of years, I kind of want to see them build on that and see if they can continue with that rather than to pull the plug. Do you think that they're thinking the same thing, or you think they still have their sights set on upgrading a catcher this offseason?
Yeah, I think I guess I'll use upgrade in a different word. Like I think Christian Bethencourt is a really interesting case, and it's a really fun story right now. But I think you want to pair Miguel Amaya with like a veteran that can. When you have to give Miguel Amaya days off, which is very regular in the catching position, like you want to have a capable veteran. And early on in the season with Yan Gomes, that wasn't the case. Yan Gomes had really, really struggled, kind of really fallen off. And that, I think, really exposed the weaknesses in Miguel Amaya. And they brought in Tomas Nito, and he kind of struggled offensively too. Like, I think it's just about getting him reps and giving him like another option that you don't feel that steep drop off from one catcher to the next. And it's interesting in Miguel's case where this is a guy who has had a bunch of injuries in his minor league career. He had a Lisfranc injury, a Tommy John, I believe from the course of like 2020 to 2022, he had played like 100 games just in general. And like only like half of them were in the catching position. Like, he's still kind of growing, to your point. Like, he's still developing. He's still learning a lot because of all that missed time. Is there going to be more growth? I mean, the Cubs are probably hopeful that is the case, but it's a really interesting player to make a midseason adjustment like he did. Like, the switch from a leg kick to a toe tap, I think from a fan or from us, just from the outside, it's like, oh, that's really easy, right? Like, you just do it. But that's not an easy adjustment. Like, that's a huge, huge adjustment that he did midseason and corrected. Does that lead to more results is the question. And I don't think the Cubs are going to look at like 2 months of really good baseball with Miguel Amaya and say like, that's who he is. We don't have to worry about it. I think they're going to try and upgrade at the very worst from a backup perspective to try and improve the offense overall from the catching position.
More big picture. And while we're on the subject of off-season plans, I know the Cubs and a lot of organizations nowadays, they're more focused on the process than they are on results. That being said, do you think the results that we've seen in August and hopefully into September, and especially if they can, you know, turn it into a playoff berth, how much do you think that's changing what maybe the plans were for this baseball team and what Jed Hoyer and the brain trust was looking at a month and a half, 2 months ago, and what they were thinking about this offseason and how they might operate?
Yeah, it's. I think that's going to be the million-dollar question. Like, what do you trust, a 4 or 5 month sample size of an offense, or, you know, like a 2 month that kind of adds into the full season? I think that's a really, really, really kind of loaded question. I still think they lean on, like, let's try and find a way to upgrade the offense and be more consistent, because this is 2 years in a row where there's been a bad month or a bad 2 month stretch that has kind of torpedoed themselves. Right. I think the last year in 2023, they had a really, really poor May, got themselves 10 under and had to dig themselves out. And we saw the effect that had right by the end of the season. They were just kind of out of gas, especially in the bullpen. This year, they had a really, really poor May and June, and really just May especially. And they had to dig themselves out. And now they're trying to play catch up. You got to find something that can help you not have that bad of a stretch, right? You're going to have bad stretches. You're going to have like a bad week or two where things aren't going well, but you got to be able to limit those so that you're not trying to dig yourself out of a hole. I think Jameson Taillon said it in Milwaukee around like the last time that they played the Brewers, where he said it was like at the tail end of the really, really bad stretch, where he was saying, you know, felt like a few bad games and then turned into a few bad weeks. And then now we just can't get out of it. And like, you don't want to have that situation for a third year in a row. And that's why I think like they're still going to find ways to try and upgrade this team so that you don't run into those kind of valleys that are so, so long.
Andy, I don't know if you're in the prediction business, but do the Cubs do it? Do they pull this off? Do they catch the Mets and the Braves? And are we talking about October baseball next time I talk to you?
I still think three games is a lot to make up in four games. So I'm going to lean towards no, but I do like I would not be shocked if that last week of the season it's a game and it's like a one game deficit and everything's meaningful. So that's what I'm going with, and we'll see what kind of plays out.
Yeah, I said I wanted meaningful baseball in September, Andy, and I got it. I didn't want to get too far ahead of myself with the new manager and a lot of moving parts. I got what I wanted in meaningful baseball in September. Now, I do want more, but big picture-wise, I feel like if you're a Cubs fan, and especially the way the season started, you kind of got to take this and be pretty happy with it, honestly.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, if you would have told me this is the conversation we were having 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have believed you. So, I mean, anything can happen in baseball. It's a month is a long time, and then we'll kind of see what happens.
That's Andy Martinez. Check out his work at MarqueeSportsNetwork.com, on Twitter at @AMartinez_11 for all things Cubs. Andy, really appreciate the time and the insight, my man. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And he joins me on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. And tonight, the Cubs are back home to take on the Pirates. Pre-game coverage is coming up at 6:05 with first pitch at 6:40 right here on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. It is day one of week one in the NFL, day one of week one in the Caleb Williams era. Let's really pin down where we expect this guy to be in about a year from now. We'll talk about that coming up next. Rami Makhlouf in for Bernstein and Holmes right here on 670 The Score.
Obviously, that's my priorities. Let's get the roster in the best shape possible, because that's going to give us the opportunity to win games. But it's always going to be to win championships, to win the division, win Super Bowls. That's always the goal. Obviously, getting into the playoffs and winning playoff games would be outstanding. But I think the biggest thing is, like, can we take that big jump from where we were last year to this year? And I think we're capable of doing it.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's Bears GM Ryan Poles. Man, I'm just a sucker for a GM getting up there and talking big. You know what I mean? Especially when, like, that clearly has not been the stated goal for the last two or three years. You know what I mean? I don't say that as a criticism. That's what Ryan Poles felt he needed to do with this organization. And now we're here to the point where he can get up to a podium and talk about stuff like that. You know, that gets me almost as giddy as the clip we played earlier of Caleb Williams getting all Bubba Gump with all the things that he can do from the quarterback position. Like, I can roll out. I can do a draw. Like, whatever it is, Caleb Williams will tell you he can do it. And I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, day one, week one of the NFL that I'm a little giddy, and these things are getting the hairs on my arms standing up and giving me the old goosebumps. But I don't know, Sean. I'm just a sucker for a GM getting up there and talking a big game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I mean, and like you said, it's like a change of tone here a little bit, where this team is now knowing they're good, knowing that they've got the talent, and they're going to go try and be a good football team. It's not kind of, oh, you know, we need to evaluate, we need to figure out. They have an identity. They've got a quarterback, hopefully. They've got a ton of offensive players. Now it's time to go see if this team can go kick some teams' butts, because I'm tired of seeing their butts kicked.
I'm Rami Makhlouf in for Bernstein and Holmes today. That's Sean Sears on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos and putting this thing together for me. We appreciate you spending a Labor Day with us. We do hope to hear from Matt Eberflus coming up in the 1 o'clock hour of the show. But obviously, if we're talking about winning Super Bowls and all that stuff that Ryan Poles is just talking about right there, I'm not putting it on him on day one. But eventually, like, the quarterback is the thing. You know what I mean? And we're going to need Caleb Williams to be that dude and lead this organization to the promised land. That's probably what it's going to take for them to eventually get to the point where they can back up that big talk that we just heard there from Ryan Poles. Every year, Mike Sando, formerly of the of ESPN, now with The Athletic, he puts out, and I don't know if I'm just nerdy, I've talked to other people in the business who feel the same way that I do about this. I wait. I anticipate the release of Mike Sando's quarterback tiers. I don't know how long He's been doing this. It goes back to his ESPN days. Now he's at The Athletic. Like, I wait with bated breath to see the quarterback tears.
That's funny. I tried to get Mike on the show. He was busy today.
Oh, really?
I wanted to, because he released those. I knew they were coming out.
Yeah, you that would have been very exciting for me.
Right.
Like I'm like a Mike Sando fanboy. I don't know how many of us there are out there, but I am.
We're a fan of Mike at the station. He's a good dude.
Great dude. Great dude. And one of the brighter football minds, I think, out there. And every year he does this quarterback. He puts out his quarterback tears. And a lot of thought and work goes into this thing to sort of divvy up the NFL's quarterback into five tiers. And there's only two tier one quarterbacks in the entire NFL, according to Mike Sando and the people who he talked to. And a tier one quarterback, that's Patrick Mahomes. I'm sorry, there's three. Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, and Josh Allen. They describe that as someone who can carry his team each week. The team wins because of him. He expertly handles pure passing situations. He has no real holes in his game. That's how he describes a tier one quarterback. Tier two quarterback he describes as a quarterback that can carry his team sometimes, but not as consistently. He can handle pure passing situations in doses and or possess other dimensions that are special enough to elevate him above tier three. He has a hole or two in his game. That's a tier two quarterback, according to Mike Sando. Tier three, and quite frankly, I'm not going past tier three because I never expect Caleb Williams to be worse than a tier three quarterback. Starting his rookie year, I never expect Caleb Williams to be worse than a tier three quarterback, so I refuse to even entertain that by telling you what a tier four and tier five quarterback are in the NFL.
Isn't that crazy that you could like say that about a Bears
yes.
quarterback and someone's like, dude, Kyle Orton's not going to be, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Jay Cutler isn't this. It's like, no, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, he will never be tier four. If he's tier four at any point, like, things have gone wrong.
Yeah.
things have gone awry.
The ship is sinking, yes.
And we need to reassess this thing. But a tier three quarterback is a quarterback who is a legitimate starter but needs a heavier run game and or defensive component to win. A lower volume drop back passing offense suits him best. So that's how he describes a tier three quarterback. He didn't put Caleb Williams into any of these categories officially for this article because he's a rookie. He's never played at the NFL level before. But a follow-up article to this, I don't know if you saw this, Sean, they stacked up everybody's strength of schedule by the quarterbacks that they face. And by the way, the Bears have the second easiest schedule according to the quarterbacks that they face in all the NFL. They face seven tier four or tier five quarterbacks on their schedule this year. But for the purposes of that article, Sando did slot Caleb Williams into one of these tiers, and he put him in tier three and near the bottom of tier three. And the guys who he said he was sort of bunched around were Baker Mayfield, Derek Carr, and Geno Smith. He has them as 19th and tied for 20th, respectively, Carr and Smith, as the 19th and 20th quarterbacks in this league. Now, I'll be real with you, and I don't know if I'm getting, again, I keep asking myself this question. I think a lot of Bears fans probably keep asking themselves this question. Am I getting carried away? Am I getting ahead of myself with Caleb Williams and all the hype and excitement around him? It's got to be a question that you keep asking yourself the same way that I keep asking myself that. But when I saw Mike Sando sort of ballpark range Caleb Williams into the lower end of tier three and say he's in the same ballpark as Baker Mayfield, Derek Carr, and Geno Smith, I was like, I think you're selling my guy a little bit short. I think he can be better. I do, man. I don't know if that's crazy, but I was like, I think he can be better than those guys.
I'm just going to tell you, that's a bad call.
Yes. And I keep going up that list, and I'll tell you when I get to where I think Caleb Williams could be this year. Also in tier three, ahead of Mayfield and ahead of Carr and ahead of Geno Smith, who he said Caleb Williams would probably be in the same ballpark as those guys. He's got Deshaun Watson. I think he could be better. Kyler Murray. I think he could be better. Then we get to the top of tier three, And you got Tua and Trevor Lawrence, 15 and 16 in his quarterback rankings, according to Mike Sando and these quarterback tiers. I think this year he could be like in the ballpark of those two guys. Sean, is that crazy?
No, I think that's fair. I think that's like kind of, I mean, those guys are guys that have high ceilings, but haven't quite lived up maybe to the potential. I think Caleb alone on talent should probably be matching them, right?
So this year, to me, he starts near the top of tier three. The question is, by year two, what is a fair, like when he's got real stats on the page for Mike Sando to go and take to all these people that he surveys when he's making the 2025 QB tiers, what's fair, what tier is it fair to expect Caleb Williams to move into by year two is the question. And I'll read again, I'll go back through what these tiers mean. Sean and I agree. Some of you out there may agree. Tier three, legitimate starter, needs a heavy running game or defensive component to win. Lower volume drop back passing offense suits him best. I think that's a good starting place for Caleb Williams in describing what you expect from him in year one. He's not going to be a tier one quarterback. I'm not going to say he's going to be a tier one quarterback by year two, who, again, they say can carry his team each week. They win because of him. He expertly handles pure passing situations. He has no real holes in his game. Any rookie has roles in his game. He should be able to handle pure passing situations pretty well. I don't know if I'd go say expertly. And I keep saying this. I don't expect the team to win because of him, especially not the first half of the season while he's sort of figuring this all out. It's going to be the defense, and it's going to be the running game that sort of lifts him up and carries this thing when Caleb Williams has those rookie moments.
Yeah, and that's totally okay, right?
Like, absolutely.
That's why this offense has the talent it does, so Caleb doesn't have to feel like he has to be that guy.
But is it crazy to think that by year two, if I'm sitting here 1 year from now, leading up to week one of the NFL season, and these QB tiers have come out, that Caleb Williams is a quarterback that can carry his team sometimes, but not as consistently? A guy who can handle pure passing situations in doses and or possesses other dimensions that are special enough to elevate him above, and he has a hole or two in his game? That describes a tier two quarterback. I think that is 100%. That description right there is 100% fair to expect, not just from Caleb Williams, but for the Bears to get Caleb Williams there by year two. Like, if we're having this conversation in a year from now, I think Caleb Williams solidly in that tier two of quarterbacks is a fair expectation, and just to give you an idea of who those tier two quarterbacks are, what league Caleb Williams will be moving into if he can plant that flag as a tier two quarterback. At the top, you got Lamar Jackson, Matthew Stafford, Justin Herbert. Those are some really damn good. I mean, the first guy I named off has two MVPs. Matthew Stafford, if he didn't play his entire career for the Lions before going to the Rams, I think we'd be talking about him the way that we do like Aaron Rodgers and some of these other like generation. I think he's that good that we'd be talking about him like one of those generational
right, like
quarterbacks.
Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, that
exactly.
Type of guy. He's in that era.
If he wasn't dealing with Lions nonsense and futility for the first 10 years of his career,
tough.
You know what I mean? Justin Herbert and Aaron Rodgers, I don't expect them to be necessarily in that neighborhood, but the bottom half of tier two, he could be Jordan Love by the end of this year. Jordan Love wasn't Jordan Love a year ago. You know what I mean? He came into that season with a lot of questions. A Kirk Cousins, a Brock Purdy, a Jalen Hurts, a Jared Goff, a Dak Prescott. Those are the guys, and C.J. Stroud, who, of course, was last year's Rookie of the Year and the guy a lot of Bears fans want to compare Caleb Williams to or hope we can compare Caleb Williams to. Bottom half of Tier 2 and being in the discussion with those types of guys, C.J. Stroud, Dak Prescott, Jordan Love, Kirk Cousins, I think that's fair. I think that those are reasonable and realistic expectations to have for Caleb Williams and the Bears by year two, which again, it's very exciting. It's very dude, I hope he gets to tier one. I really do. I hope one day I open Mike Sando's QB tier rankings like I do every year, like it's Christmas morning. Or, ooh, it's the quarterback tiers. And he's at the top of tier two. If Caleb Williams never gets to tier one, we all want him to be Patrick Mahomes someday. You know what I mean? But if he never gets to tier one and is just like the top of tier two where Lamar Jackson and Matthew Stafford are right now, that's good enough to win some Super Bowls. Like
still the best quarterback we've ever seen, right?
Yes, 100% the best quarterback we've ever seen. And if Ryan Poles does his job well in terms of building the rest of the roster around him, and Matt Eberflus is a real NFL head coach, that's good enough to be in the discussion for a Super Bowl by next year. If this dude can reach the top of tier two, which I think he can, we're talking legitimately being in position to talk about Super Bowls 1 year from now here in the city of Chicago. Do you hear what I just said? Do you hear what I just said? As I look down out over this great city and downtown, the lake is right down there, the high rises. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful Labor Day. 1 year from now, we can legitimately be talking Super Bowls in this town. That's right. Get giddy, Chicago. Get giddy. Year two, tier two is a realistic expectation. I'm Rami Makhlouf. I'm in for Bernstein and Holmes. We are going to hear from Bears head coach Matt Eberflus in the 1 o'clock hour. But right after this, the White Sox keep outdoing the White Sox in bad. I'm Rami Makhlouf. I'm in for Bernstein and Holmes, and back right after this on 670 The Score.
Two balls, two strikes, the count to Sosa. And we got him swinging on the slider. Mets sweep the Sox with a 2-0 win here in this finale. And the loss today now gives the Sox a 10-game losing streak. And with 107 losses on the season, that now sets the franchise record for most losses in a single season.
Yeah, very disappointing homestand for a number of reasons. It was the longest homestand of the year, and the Sox will walk away without any wins. So the Mets doing what they had to do. They're right in the middle of the wild card race, and they swept the series.
We're back, live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
And for Bernstein and Holmes, Sean Sears on the other side of the glass. 312-644-6767 is how you can get in the show. Drop me a text. I'm with you until 2 o'clock. Chuck Swirsky takes over these airwaves at 2 o'clock. That's big-time stuff right there. Chuck Swirsky on The Score. The first full-time sports talk radio host in this damn town, ladies and gentlemen. Chuck Swirsky takes over these airwaves at 2 o'clock in for The Score afternoon show. And I've been saying all day here on the midday show from the morning into the afternoon, which we are into now, it's a really good day. It's a really, really good day, man. It's Labor Day. The weather is beautiful. I'm going to go sit out on a patio somewhere right here near the station, have some lunch and something to drink as soon as we're done here at 2 o'clock, because it's a perfect day for that. It's also week one, or day one of week one of the NFL season and the Caleb Williams era. The Cubs are relevant and vying for a playoff spot. It's a really good day to be in Chicago. But we do, and I'm gonna keep it short because I want to keep the vibes positive here on The Score in the city of Chicago today.
Look at us. Huh? Who would have thought?
Not me.
Exactly. We do got to mention the milestone. Is that how I would describe it? The milestone that the White Sox reached yesterday?
It's not technically wrong. I just don't know if anyone's going to look back at it and be like, ah, yes.
You heard it there on NBC Sports Chicago. They lose 2-0 to the Mets. Couldn't help the Cubs out. They lose 2-0 to the Mets. And that sends a new franchise record for losses in a season with 107. Here's the wild thing about it. The 1970 White Sox went 56-106. That set the previous mark. They lost that 106th game on October 1st. The White Sox broke the record a full calendar month ahead of the worst team in the history of that franchise. That's wild, dude. That's almost impressive. You know what I mean? Like, that you almost look at that and go, wow, how'd you even manage?
They're so bad that they went from being not newsworthy to like headline worthy because of how bad this team is. They have 31 wins.
Dude,
it's nuts.
I kid you not that when I'm reading stuff about the White Sox and getting ready for this show, I'm shocked how often I see like a number and they go, it hasn't been this bad since earlier this year with for this White Sox team. You know, like that's they keep outdoing themselves in terms of bad. I don't know. They keep finding new depths. I don't understand.
I think they've started their third 10-game losing streak. Like, that's unreal.
Just listen, they capped off a 0-10 homestand. That's never happened. That's never happened in White Sox history. I'm not just talking about in the days of Guaranteed Rate Field, previously known as U.S. Cellular Field, previously known as New Comiskey Park. Not just in the history of that park. Never, ever, ever did they go 0-10 on a homestand. Their previous longest winless homestand was 7 games. Guess when that happened, Sean? Take a wild guess.
I think it was June.
It was this year. It was this May. That's another one of those numbers where they go, it hasn't been this bad since, and it's just this year's team. Their current 10-game losing streak, it's their third longest losing streak of the season. How is 10 games your third longest losing streak of the season? How?
I feel so bad for White Sox.
I do too.
It's
like
so
usually,
tough.
Dude, usually I'd have fun with this. You know, and I don't hate the White Sox. I don't by any means.
Nor do
like
I, yeah.
Good things for Chicago make me happy. You know, but there is the element of like a brotherly or a friendly rivalry. Like growing up playing Little League, I love to go up against my brother or my friends, you know what I mean? And just have those bragging rights. And when they lost, you might give them a little jab. I can't even do that. I can't even do that with this White Sox
mean,
team.
Right?
And with my friends that are White Sox fans. Well, on the one hand, it feels mean. On the other hand, they've just checked out. Like, they don't even care. Like, I could talk trash and they're like, dude, I haven't paid attention to that team in 4 months. What are you even talking about? It's Bears season. What are you even talking about right now? There's 24, and by the, so now the new mark is not just the worst team in White Sox history. Now the new mark they're chasing, I guess, is the worst record in the history of baseball. There's 24 games left in the season to surpass the modern record for losses in a season, 120. That was set by the 1962 Mets. They were an expansion team. They were an expansion team 60-some years ago that lost 120 games. The White Sox are 7-44 in July and August combined, and they need 14 losses this month to break that record. How likely is that, you ask? They haven't lost less than 19 games in a calendar month so far this season. It's happening. Not to mention, they hit the road next with Baltimore and Boston. And they're 13-53 on the road and only have one road series win all season long. I legitimately feel bad for White Sox fans. I do. I thought it might be bad. I did not think it would be this bad. But man, do they keep finding new levels of futility. I don't know how anybody keeps their job. Jerry Reinsdorf should be stripped of ownership of that team. They should be relegated. Or whatever they do in European soccer. I don't really follow it. Good Lord. But you know what? That's enough. That's enough of the negative stuff. That's enough of the bad. There's too much good here in Chicago to spend too much time on the bad. And we'll get right back to the good, or what we hope is good, coming up next. And that's your Chicago Bears. We'll hear from the head coach, Matt Eberflus. Coming up next, Rami Makhlouf in for Boers and Bernstein. And back right after this on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.